This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. If you live in Grand Haven, you might have noticed a new billboard up in town this fall. It calls attention to missing and murdered Native people. The project sponsoring the billboard is the Native Justice Coalition, which serves the entirety of Native communities in our region. That includes everyone in the range of my voice today. Its founder and executive director is Cecilia LaPointe, and they're joining us now. Cecilia, welcome to Stateside. Do you want to introduce yourself further?
Yes, Monongahchab, Boju, Nigigans Bapi Indigenous Cause, Aji Shaktodam, Triquidong, Ninawa Mashkizi Bi Indojaba, Namanitagon Indao. I said my name is Little Laughing Otter. I'm Crane Clan. I come from the Kiwanabe Indian community and the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, and I live in the land beneath the trees, otherwise known as Manistee.
As I mentioned, the coalition paid for the billboard that's up right now in Grand Haven, and it's going to be up there till October 25th, a few more days now. So this billboard was meant to raise awareness around missing and murdered women and girls and Two-Spirit people. Could you describe what the billboard looks like?
Yes. The billboard has an image of a woman, Native woman, when there's a red handprint on her face, and that is just to symbolize the issue. I know there's discussion on that, and it varies from the different tribes regarding what that represents. But with this specific issue, it represents MMIW. So, and it can also represent MMIWG2S, and there's other acronyms to describe the issue. The billboard is meant to draw attention. It says invisible no more, somebody's daughter. Some of them, they're different. The one in Grand Haven also has addressing the fact that, social distancing doesn't stop predators. And it also says that, this is how many, based on the report, the most recent report that we have, 5,712 Native women were reported murdered or missing in 2016. And now we've lost count. And we want people to understand what that means. It's not just, okay, this is an issue. I can't do anything about it. I'm powerless. I live in Grand Haven. I live in Holland. I live in Muskegon, and I'm going to and from work on US 31. No, there's something you can do. There's ways you can take action. When you see something, say something, And if someone's dealing with racism right in front of you that, is Native, say in a grocery store, stand up and speak out against it. Don't let that person feel powerless. Support Native communities in exercising our treaty rights, because we still deal with a variety of issues like what the Mi'kmaq are dealing with out in Nova Scotia, and we have other issues always, unfortunately, taking place. So there is many ways that an individual can take action, and communities can take action as well. Just being aware that trafficking is occurring, just being aware that this isn't going away, and we're going to do what we can to take action as an organization and as a coalition in the Great Lakes.
Could you tell us a little bit about the conversation that you had with the position of this? Why Grand Haven? There have been billboards in other communities in the area over the past couple of years, but how did the conversation start about this particular location?
Yeah, so our work has grown, and actually the MMIW G2S program is just over a year old. We actually launched this program in August of last year. And since this time, we've had 11 billboards in 9 different locations. And with that being said, we just looked at, the dynamics of the areas that we work in and what does it look like? Are people paying attention to the issue? Is there Native erasure? There most certainly is everywhere, whether you're in Detroit, Grand Rapids, even our Native communities in Northern Michigan, where we do have more visibility, there is still erasure. So we picked Grand Haven just because of the dynamics of the area. And we looked at it as a place as well, that there are many of our Anishinaabe that live in the area. And in Grand Haven and Grand Haven, Spring Lake, and Muskegon, we actually have a larger population that is members of the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians community. So because We wanted to look and see, you know, what we can do. What is another way to kind of spark a conversation and challenge, you know, challenge dynamics that exist in communities, that complacency that everything's okay, everything is fine in the suburbs when it's actually not.
Yeah. Could you explain a little bit about why you founded the coalition and what convinced you about the need to do this work?
The coalition was founded out of a variety of things. If you look at it almost like as a pie chart, it wasn't just one thing. So we had an event in the Keweenaw Indian community in 2015, Healing Stories on Racial Equity. We were a part of a statewide racial equity coalition. So we were the only project that took place in a Native community at the time. So the Keweenaw Indian community is located in the western part of the Upper Peninsula. And we had an amazing event and a successful event. And after this event, another community member and I were like, wow, this was amazing. You know, it went by so fast. What are we going to do? And basically, with our conversations and moving forward, this is how the Native Justice Coalition was founded. But it was also founded because out of the struggle and out of things I've personally experienced, like racism in the workplace or racism in day-to-day life. But it's not just that. It's also the generational trauma, historical trauma, and the current traumas we face as Native people. So I take all of that and I've used it to grow the coalition.
Tell me a little bit about the coalition's goals.
Yes. So basically we are, you know, we work on Native-led social and racial justice. We're focused also primarily on our rural and remote communities. So we've worked in communities like the Keweenaw Indian community, the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. We've also worked in Hannahville Indian community and Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians. We also focus on harm reduction as a critical area. And we have a Two-Spirit program, which Two-Spirit is a pan Native American term to describe LGBTQ plus, as well as gender variance and gender expression. So there'd be different terms to describe this. Maybe these terms in our language, which here in the territory would be Anishinaabe Mo'en, they would describe someone who is different, but it might not necessarily be connected to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, because these are pre-colonial terms. We also have the MMIW G2S program, which MMIW G2S stands for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit. That focuses on addressing the issue that is basically one of the ways that genocide is continuing to harm our people and communities.
I mean, it sounds like it's certainly about missing and murdered women, girls, and Two-Spirit people, but it sounds like the coalition's work has come to be about a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, that's certainly true. We're a young organization. We're just rounding out year three. And as we move into year four, there's actually some new programs we're looking to launch. And just growing our work, you know, of course, and I always say this, unfortunately, the need is huge. One of the things and how we look at it is that we're not actually here to educate the majority culture. We're the original people of, you know, this land. So as the originals, as Anishinaabe here in Anishinaabe Aki, you know, we look at it as we have to be strengthening and healing within the community, because there's always going to be those threats. I mean, you just had Trump here saying that we are basically wrong for trying to change Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. There's nothing wrong about that. You know, there's nothing wrong with addressing racism or injustice, because what we deal with on a day-to-day basis, whether we live in Manistee, Sault Ste. Marie, Detroit, Grand Rapids, Keweenaw Bay, or Escanaba, we deal with racism on a day-to-day basis. Whether you go to the grocery store, whether you're going to exercise your treaty rights. And so we just want to be there. And we will go the extra mile, literally down US 2 and I-75. We do not mind being there for the people. And we have a lot of wonderful people involved in our work. A lot of beauty in the community has come and is growing with this difficult work.
Yeah. It feels like the coalition has a subtle role to play here, in that, you know, you've talked about the fact that it's important not to invest too heavily in systems that are part of settler colonial infrastructure, but at the same time to inspire the kind of reflection that you're talking about, getting people who maybe haven't thought about the issue to invest in it. Really, is that part of the reason why you chose Grand Haven?
Yeah, definitely.
I wanted to take a minute to get your opinion on a piece of legislation that was passed this year. It was passed in the Senate at the direction of Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and it's called Savannah's Act. It directs the Department of Justice to review and develop law enforcement and justice protocols to address missing and murdered Native people's cases. And I would stop short of calling 2020 a watershed year, but it does feel like it's been a while since something this sweeping that applies to both Native and non-Native government structures to act. Do you think that a bill like that represents some kind of real progress?
Most definitely. Yeah, and I think it's long overdue with what we need to address. There's been many people pushing for decades for the changes that we seek in our Native communities. And, you know, the level of sexual violence, the level of overall violence that Native women, girls, and Two-Spirits face is off the charts. And, you know, there's a quote that says one of three Native women will experience violence in their lifetime. But we've often in the community, we go, well, who are the other two? So there's a lot of conversation on what is this about? And some of the work that has been done by people, you know, in our Native communities is that this is a form of continuing colonization. It's a form of continuing genocide, that we are targeted based on our race. We're targeted based on our gender. And because we have things like the maze of injustice with the different laws, when we seek, you know, justice in this injustice, we don't get any sort of resolution.
I just wanted to add that bill was named in honor of Savannah LaFontaine Graywind, who was killed in 2017. How do you reset sort of your mind and your goals in a year like this one, where people have a lot of needs just related to their own lives and their own families, and at the same time, they do have a need to connect with their communities?
Yes. One of the things we've done is having virtual conversations, but we found, regardless of whether you're a baby boomer, Gen X, Gen Z, or a millennial, that the virtual conversations are a bit difficult. And with this work, the work that we do, we really need that community connection. So it's been difficult to not be able to meet in person, knowing that because of the pandemic, there are other struggles that have occurred as a result. So we're trying to be there for the community how we can, and just strategizing forward for 2021 and making sure that we can do what we've done in previous years, like the Healing Stories Program on Racial Justice, the conference, and just planning for maybe some other new possibilities to meet the needs that will unfortunately come out of this year.
Do you mind my asking what's getting you through right now?
I would say definitely the community. I just think of everyone's smiles, and I think of the strength of our people, what we've endured, what we continue to endure. I think about my family, my community, my relations, my parents, my sister, and my brother, and my family. In the Native community, our families are often not just, you know, who our extended relations are. It could be our friends. It could be, you know, someone, an elder, really important in our life. And so, you know, making sure to stay in touch with those elders, which I do, making sure to stay in touch with community members that you know, support and love this work. And that's the lifeline, you know. And because I'm Gen X, I actually really love talking on the phone. So I make sure, I do make sure to call, and I do make sure to talk and get, you know, the support and just kind of fostering and building, continuing to do the work behind the scenes. So when things are better and we can be more in community, that we're there, we're on the road, we're ready to go. And having these conversations with funders, you know, because it's actually 0.3% of 1% of philanthropy goes to Native-led groups working on our own issues. So we get the lowest funding out of all groups, and we, you know, experience all these various critical issues. Again, I want to emphasize, there is a lot of beauty in the community. There is wonderful and wonderful things happening. I can hardly keep up with the amount of awesome Native-owned businesses and just staying away and not making so many purchases, although you would like to. Just the resilience, just to highlight the strength of our elders, you know, people's amazing journeys to healing, to sobriety, to education, to becoming, you know, a physicist or a lawyer. These are amazing things that, as someone who's Gen X, that, you know, a lot of the previous generations were not able to do. But we are about transforming and healing and empowering within, and we want to be there for our people. So we're going to continue to strategize and build and talk to funders and make sure we are supported and able to take the work to the next level in 2021 and beyond.
Before we wrap things up here, what would you say to people about why these issues are important and potentially healing for Native communities?
Yeah, I think it's important for people to understand that it's the work that we do is not just the work we're doing now. And how we often view things in the Native community is the work we're doing is, you know, there are many of our ancestors who did not have a voice, and that this work that we're doing, it gives their pain, their sorrow, their grief a voice. And so together, we actually heal with the ancestors, and our stories give their stories power.
Cecilia Lapointe is the founder and executive director of the Native Justice Coalition. Cecilia, it's great to hear from you. Keep safe, please. We wish you all the health that can be had in 2020.